Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez coming to you from the United States of America. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about. You see that right there? That's a nuclear power plant on fire after being bombed by a Ukrainian drone strike. Man, that's scary looking, isn't it? Talk about a dangerous play. Once again, this is Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this. All right, so let's get to it. Ukraine, after attacking the border town of Sudzha, as we told you about last week, has now attacked a nuclear power plant. Again, by the way. Some say it's the last gap of losing cause because Ukraine is running out of will, it seems, as well as running out of soldiers, as well as running out of ammo. So, you know, what's a country to do, right? But regardless of what you may think about it or even what you may think of this war, when you start bombing nuclear facilities, you're opening up a whole different game, a most dangerous game. Look at that. Look at these pictures. Damn. I mean, here's what it's looked like. It looks like and where it happened. It's the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, considered one of the largest in all of Europe. The fire began when it was shelled by Ukrainian forces, but thank God for all the people of both Ukraine and Russia near there. Firefighters have now gotten it under control after all the reactors were shut down. Here's a plant official talking about it.
The Ukrainian NATO regime has once again shelled the nuclear power plant of the city of Energodar. It should be noted that the Ukrainian regime, supported by NATO curators, systematically shells the entire north of the Zaporizhzhia region, which is reached by drones, artillery bombardment, and mortar artillery.
So the International Atomic Energy Agency did put out a statement, by the way. Quote, they say these reckless attacks endanger nuclear safety and they increase the risk of a nuclear accident and they must stop now. That's what they say. Well, that's what they're supposed to say, right? That's their agency. That's what they're supposed to respond to. But here's a funny thing about the statement they put out. It doesn't specifically refer to Ukraine. Doesn't even mention them. Meanwhile, hardly a peep from the U.S. State Department. And maybe that's fitting, considering this statement that we found just recently. It was written back in 2019 when this whole thing started. So what you're about to hear is an admission that people at the highest levels here in Washington, D.C. knew, almost expected, that this devastation that's taking place in Ukraine now would occur, and they essentially decided to go along with it anyway. So here's where I found this. It's a RAND report. RAND does intel work for the CIA, essentially, and explains how Russia, quote, taking more of Ukraine might only increase the burden, albeit at the expense of the Ukrainian people. However, such a move might also come at a significant cost to Ukraine and to U.S. prestige and credibility. This could produce disproportionately large Ukrainian casualties, territorial losses, and refugee flows. So, I mean, Manila, there you go. It sounds to me like some bureaucrats were willing and said so right there, willing to sacrifice Ukraine and the people of Ukraine, and that people would die for A, punishing Russia, and B, making a killing from this proxy war. How do you see it?
Yeah, Rick, absolutely. For folks like me and other people like you as well that have been following this story going as far back as 2014, when really the initial coup happened inside of Ukraine, you could see this burgeoning and brewing for all of those years. Mm-hmm. And that 2019, when this RAND report came out, it shows that those folks right over there at Capitol Hill have disregarded everything that intelligence, effectively agencies like RAND, who does the actual legwork and war gaming, to say that, hey, this is a bad idea, and that the government elected officials on Capitol Hill, as well as the person currently occupying the White House, presumably Joe Biden, making this decision to move forward in spite of what the eggheads, we'll call them, have told them not to do. They went forward with it anyway. And then if we also look back at what's happening at Zaporizhzhia, at the power plant, now we've seen since this conflict began in 2022 that Ukraine has consistently been shelling the nuclear power plant. And I think at this point, because the IAEA is not specifically naming Ukraine as the culprit, I think it's safe to say it is at the behest of the EU leaders as well as the United States to kind of refrain from naming them. Now, this also goes hand in hand with what we saw happen to the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, where everybody's trying to say, well, the Russians did it themselves. They blew up their own pipeline. And now they're trying to blow up their own scientist at Zaporozhye.
If the Russians spit on a sidewalk, it makes front page news in the New York Times. But somehow you attack a nuclear power plant and, oh, slap on the wrist. Nobody should. My mother used to do that. I used to hate that. Didn't you? Did your parents do this? So me and my brothers from time to time would do something, right? But oftentimes it was my brother who was older who would do it. And he's the one who should get in trouble. But my parents would come home and say, we need to stop doing this. Where's the we? I wasn't involved. He's the one who did it. It's like the same thing here. It's like, well, we all need to stop and be nice. Well, we didn't do it. He did it, you know? In this crazy. Anyway, let me tell you about somebody. His name, there's a guy you need to know about. His name is Rahm Israel Emanuel. Rahm Israel Emanuel. He's the U.S. ambassador to Japan. But when it comes to serving either the U.S. or Japan, he clearly chooses neither. Which country does he defend? His namesake, Israel. Here's what's happening. So Japan is commemorating one of the most horrendous acts in history, the nuclear bombing of Nagasaki during World War II. But because protesters say that they would show up and interrupt the event to protest what Israel is doing in Gaza, the Japanese officials chose to ask Israel to not show up for this public event so it wouldn't get out of hand. Well, apparently, that was enough for both Ambassador Emanuel and a diplomat from the UK to say, well, if Israel's not allowed to go, then we're not going to go either. That's weird, isn't it? By the way, Russia and Belarus were also not invited. But that's okay with the U.S., and that's okay with the British diplomats. No complaints there. Here's what a Japanese scholar, smart guy it seems, thinks of all of this.
Israel has absolutely no place in this event, and it is utterly outrageous that, you know, people would even think that Israel should be invited. The Russians and the Belarusians are not invited either. The West is perfectly happy with that. But when it comes to their ally Israel, oh, wow, you know, this is, we have to make a big stink.
The Japanese decide who they want to invite, and somehow the UK and the United States are saying, no, you have to invite who we decide we want you to invite to your party. This one has nothing to do with my mother, but I do want your reaction, Manila.
Well, one thing I would note about Rahm Emanuel is his brother, I forget his first name, but the brother's Emanuel, the older brother is also a high-level DNC delegate that was part of the oustering of Joe Biden from the 2024 presidential cycle. So I think it's important to note that there's a brotherly connection there as well.
Yeah, but, he has his brother Ezekiel is a brilliant, brilliant scientist who devised many of the medical plans involving Medicare and Medicaid in the United States. So you can't take that away from him.
And another brother. The other brother is a big Hollywood agent who is a big DNC donor and delegate. So, like I said, a lot of brothers in that Emanuel family, and they play a lot in the DNC swimming pool, and they decide effectively who gets to play even here domestically, as we saw the oustering of the sitting president off of the 2024 re-election. So, you know, that should be worth noting. So when Rahm Emanuel throws his name behind who should be on the invite list for Japan, that shouldn't come as a surprise either. He was, is the U.S. envoy to Japan. And it's worth noting that it was the mayor of Nagasaki that declined to invite Israel, and the president, Fumio Kishida, just quietly didn't say anything, didn't object, and didn't say, hey, you gotta invite. Yeah. And Rahm Emanuel, because the president didn't say anything, or the prime minister rather didn't say anything, Rahm Emanuel decided to speak up on behalf of Israel. And I think it's worth noting that this is the same people that are putting Kamala Harris in front of the ticket there. So It would be interesting to hear what Kamala Harris has to say about Rahm Emanuel doing such a thing
on behalf of Israel.
We're not hearing any of that either.
I don't think Kamala Harris in the middle of a campaign is going to be making public statements about any public policies.
She's probably not going to do that until she...
Well, of course she should, but I mean, when was the last time in U.S. politics that somebody running for office did what they were supposed to do? No, this might as well be a beauty pageant in our back in our high school at this point. And that's pretty much what we can expect, unfortunately, as you say. Thanks, Manila. We appreciate it. All right, here's what we're going to do. When we come back, we've got a special guest. And I want to talk to her about something going on right now in Israel, because I think you might recall that last week, you remember when we were talking about that incident in Israel where they, I hate using this word, but it's what happened. They sodomized some guy who they had picked up in a raid. People in Israel are supporting this, and it's still become a bit of a controversy. Well, there's video out of this now. And I'm going to be talking to Sarah Bills. She's an independent journalist and the co-founder of DD Politics. Pardon me. DD Geopolitics, and she's going to be talking with me in just a little bit. You stay right there. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being with us. Remember when I mentioned this story to you? I think it was a week and a half ago or so when this thing first happened and we were following it here. So the story that we've been following for you is how Israeli soldiers were accused of torturing Palestinian captives. They weren't even proven to be members of Hamas, just people they picked up. And then they sodomized them with a metal pipe. It's caused the attention of the entire world media, most of it because members of the Knesset and even protesters in Israel have actually defended what these guys did. Some saying, yeah, this is what we should do to all our prisoners from now on. Sick. Even though their captives weren't even prosecuted. Let me say that again. All right, here's the video. We have this video now, the incident. It's been leaked and it's making the rounds once again all over the world. In the video, you can see the soldiers with guard dogs standing over these Palestinians who are on the ground. They've been all rounded up and they're suspected of being, I guess, part of Hamas. Then one is walked to an area behind these three barricades there with those X's. See that right there? And that's where the assault takes place. And here is the U.S. State Department, right? When asked about this, what do you think they're going to say? Here, listen.
Prisoners' human rights need to be respected in all cases. And when there are alleged violations, the government of Israel needs to take steps to investigate those who are alleged to have committed abuses and, if appropriate, hold them accountable.
And, of course, the government of Israel, as Sarah Bills joins me now, she's an independent journalist and the co-founder of DD Geopolitics. She's joining us now to talk about this. And, of course, we would expect, because that's what they always do, they do a thorough investigation and they come clean with complete transparency, does Israel. Right? Is that right, Sarah?
Yes, we've investigated ourselves and we found no wrongdoing.
Ain't that right? It's like that, it's telling the fox, so please take that chicken out of your mouth and then tell me if you took the chicken. And the fox says,
correct.
I investigated myself. I did not take that chicken.
All while the Israeli citizens are protesting and jail breaking them out of jail. It's everything's just sheer chaos there. It's like a rogue failed state. There was a protest yesterday where he's a previous MP. He's a very maniacal, very extreme far right.
Mm-hmm.
He led a protest yesterday saying this is Sodom. And they were protesting their right to do whatever they want to Palestinian prisoners. Oh.
So it's a biblical reason? Is that they're using the Bible to approve of doing this to another human being?
I have to sadly, I'm admittedly not well versed enough in the Bible manipulate any of the verses to allow me to sexually abuse other people, but these far right Israeli Zionists do that a lot. That's how we kind of gotten Zionism to have such a strong foothold is by manipulating religious texts in a way. So they could be, but I don't think it's that. I think it's more so about a power dynamic and making sure that the Palestinians remain dehumanized.
Isn't that what got them into this problem to begin with? I mean, I'm not excusing October 7th. It was a horrific, horrible attack on innocent people, but you could make an argument that it got to that place because of what you just said, that the people who attacked the Israelis felt dehumanized, and not just in the last year or the last couple of years, but for decades.
Well, correct. And that's part of what you have to do when you're in these kind of fascistic, colonial, imperialistic movements, is to dehumanize your enemy. Otherwise, you're going to feel the guilt of inflicting so much pain upon them. So that's a part, that's kind of a feature. That's not a bug. They have to dehumanize the Palestinians. So you can only be dehumanized that long before, you know, I mean, I think that the prediction was 2020 and the Gaza Strip would be unlivable. They lasted another 4 years. You can only last so long in those conditions with that sort of psychological warfare against you.
How does a mass mentality like this develop? Because, you know, and I know, I'm sure, you have a lot of friends who are either Jewish Americans or Israeli Americans, and they're wonderful, smart, sensitive people who are in every way no different than anybody else. But it seems, and obviously your religion has nothing to do with, you know, foreign policy, but it seems like there's this thing going on in Israel right now where it's this, we all got to think like this, and it just... I don't understand it, and I know that history is replete with situations like this, Cambodia, et cetera. But it just seems odd, doesn't it? That they, it's like you almost don't you want to like go there and like shake them out of it and say, look what you're doing to yourselves, to your reputation forever. I don't know.
They don't see it like that. Most of the people in those are the outliers. Those are the minority that say like, oh my God, this has to stop. For the majority of them, their mentality is that this is within their right. This is still retaliation for October 7th. They really do believe most of what their government says to them in regards to destroying Hamas and wanting Hamas to surrender. They don't have that innate distrust of the media and the government that we do here in America.
Peer pressure is a
they're raised in a society that tells them everybody around them lies to them and wants them dead. So
it's like peer pressure, government control,
like a cult.
And yeah. Well, and then you have, you know, a prime minister who, as we know, according to polls, not according to Sarah or Rick, every poll shows that as soon as this war is over, when it's over, he's out. They don't want him there. So if I were him, I would do the same thing Donald Rumsfeld and George Bush and Dick Cheney did. Let's keep this Iraq war thing going. Look at our polls. They're going up.
Exactly. And whether to keep it going or to just avoid the courts going to prison, exactly that. He also, Bibi Netanyahu, knows he has a much stronger ally in Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So if he kind of white knuckles it until then, I think at least he has things can't get worse.
Yeah.
They can only get better for me. So I do think that he does suffer from quite a low approval rating, but Israelis are notoriously fickle, and he could literally free a hostage tomorrow and his approval rating could shoot up again.
Yeah.
So, and he is playing a good game. He's deliberately not rescued the American hostages. That's to keep America hostage.
You know, you don't really want the hostages free when the guy you're negotiating the release of the hostages with, you assassinate. It's like, I mean, can there be better evidence of that?
And he was a moderate. He was the one that was probably willing to come to the table in the most good faith. The guy that they just put in charge is a maniacal anti-Zionist, and I don't think he believes in a two-state solution at all. So, but again, this could be what Israel wants. Israel might want an extremist on the other side.
Have you figured out, let's change topics and go to Ukraine, have you figured out what the heck Zelensky's doing there? Because it seems like, at least by every credible report that I read, he's certainly not winning. If anything, the Russian troops are incrementally moving into his country, and suddenly he starts pulling troops, the very few he has left, to try and stop the Russians, and he throws them into a border town to attack Russia, and now he attacks a nuclear power plant. Can you make sense of this for us?
Well, I couldn't. So this morning I decided to look at the Western mainstream media, because I figured they could tell me why he's doing it. And
sure. Even
they don't know, which I thought was really interesting. The London Times called this excursion risky. A total of 8 Times in a very short article, and the picture of him depicted him almost like Hitler. So it was quite interesting. I don't think anybody knows what to make of it. The articles that I've read have hinted at and kind of just affirmed that the West had no idea.
Yeah, the people, I worked at Fox, I worked at NBC, MSNBC, I worked at CNN, I've worked at Univision, I worked at all of these places. And I can tell you that these people, although they're wonderful people and I have no problems with hanging out with them and having beers, they're generally really stupid when it comes to the thing you know, geopolitics. And it is frustrating because these are interesting stories that should be told with information and history and perspective, and they ain't got none of that.
Well, no, but they're presenters. Not all analysts make good presenters, and not all presenters are good analysts. You just got lucky because you're a double threat. But yeah, everybody's kind of in the dark. They kind of have that recency bias, or kind of like that what's in front of me bias. This is all that really matters. And it's an isolated incident. But if we look at the pattern of behavior, we had terrorist attacks in Bryansk, and then we had frequent terrorist attacks on Crimea. Then they kind of got desensitized to them. So now Zelensky's like, I got to do something big. I mean, we're moving a carrier to the Middle East for Israel, a whole carrier strike group. Zelensky must feel pretty left out and pretty dejected right now.
You do get a sense. I think you're onto something there, Sarah. I get a sense that while we still, you know, do the, Ukraine, got to protect Ukraine talk, it's mostly talk. I have a sense that place where we used to be, we're no longer there, and I'm not sure we're ever going to get there again from the standpoint of it's all about defending Ukraine now or in the future. What's your sense?
No, I don't think so either. I think that this sort of lifted a veil, and especially if Donald Trump gets elected, it will be even worse.
Yeah.
We were very indifferent to Ukraine prior to 2022, and now all of a sudden, you know, the liberal media really put on the jet engines and like sympathy and charities and stuff like that. And I really got a sense that there was a strong war fatigue with this war. I don't feel like Americans feel connection to it. I think it was all artificial to begin with.
They could never find it on a map. One final thing, since you're talking this way, I find J.D. Vance fascinating. And I think that although, you know, like me and like you and like every other human being, he has his weaknesses. I think he's got a better geopolitical outlook than just about anybody, with the possible exception of Jimmy Carter, who's ever run for this type of office. What do you think?
I think that the ongoing consensus is that J.D. Vance is weird. That's like the new meme or something.
So am I, by the way. So am I.
Yeah, we're all weird. I kind of want weird people in office. I think that people don't really appreciate his foreign policy or his lack thereof, but a lot of people really do like his views on Ukraine and his frankness to just say, I don't care about Ukraine. I'm not even picking up the phone.
Yeah, why are we there? Why are we still right. fighting there? What's it got to do with me or my kids? And why aren't we building schools here? And why are we feeding the contractors?
He comes from a working class family in middle America. He doesn't care what's happening in Kursk or Donetsk.
Down to 30 seconds. How do you see the election right now?
I don't know. Some they're using AI. They're going crazy. Everything's up in the air. The polls switched from day to day, up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
I don't know. But tonight is really big. Elon will be just having a conversation live with Donald Trump. And I think that we'll see another surge in his polls again. He really knows how to connect with regular people. And Kamala just does not have that gene in her.
Yeah, yeah. She's paying attention, though. She's standing where she needs to stand and saying what they write for her. He's not. Let's see how that works out. You are a pleasure to talk to, Sarah. Thanks so much.
As always.
We're out of time. We'll do it again. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's our show. Remember, always look outside your own box. Truths, they don't live in boxes, as we like to say. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you again next time.